our lives could be summarized in that way. And he did everything as God commanded him. Wouldn't that be wonderful to have that as your legacy? I'm starting this new sermon series on heroes. Noah is my first. And he is just a tremendous hero of the faith, which I'm going to talk more at length about in a story. Talk more in a story manner. I just want to tell his story. And the story's been told so many times, but so many times wrongly. Just kind of wanted to get some of the background history and everything, and then thought I would just rent a movie about, made by History Channel. Oh, dear God. Wow, they had some Jewish scholars on there explaining some of the ancient Jewish literature telling about how, Noah was born with this white hair and blonde eyes, and he came out circumcised already, cut his own umbilical cord, stood up, and started talking. They really made and throughout, and actually we turned it off after about 10 minutes, couldn't take anymore. They were just making Noah to be some, fairy tale-like creation that just was so antithetical to all of faith. And then I thought, well, I want to watch that movie Noah with Russell Crowe, just to see maybe what others, I had been told, it's a really bad movie, don't even bother. I wanted to see in case people maybe had watched this and, what was it about? Oh, my goodness. I would say that they took, you can imagine Hollywood would take a little bit of license, liberty for expanding upon the simple story. Oh, wow, they just violated the story. They made Noah out to be a madman. And at one point, he's standing there getting ready to kill his two little granddaughters with a knife, traumatizing his daughter-in-law. He was just a man not even of faith. It was these giant fallen angels that, as they fell, became rock creatures. They helped Noah build the ark. Anyway, don't even go there. Just saying. Okay, let me see if I can set the story right, if you've kind of seen any of this, and just tell the story, because the story is a wonderful story. Very simply put, in just a few chapters at the beginning of the Bible. And then I want to draw out, some of the heroic things about Noah and about his amazing faith, but then try and see if we can bring it down and contextualize it and talk about how it applies to our lives. So that's my purpose this morning. So you start out with Noah, this righteous man in the midst of this very wicked generation and people, where the wickedness was just completely pervasive throughout. And you can imagine it was a generation where, and it literally says in the Bible that God was grieved, and that his heart was filled with pain. I mean, you can just imagine God looking down with grief and filled with pain because of his creation just being so corrupted. There was so much violence. And it got to a level where he just wanted to do a reboot. Just completely just start over. And so he determined that he was going to just destroy everything with a flood. But as he was looking, there was one man that stood out, and that was Noah. It says that he was a righteous man. He was blameless. God deemed him as blameless. And I love how it describes him. He walked with God. He walked with God. Again, parents, grandparents, what kind of a legacy do you want to have and establish with your children, with your grandchildren? Some of the young people here, to have a legacy where you walk with God, and then that passes down generation after generation, because same thing was said about Noah's great-grandfather, Enoch. And just a couple verses in the Bible about him. Just short. And Enoch walked with God, and then he was no more because God took him up to heaven. Very, very cool. And so that faith, the walking with God, must have passed down from Enoch to Methuselah, Noah's grandpa, and then to Lamech, his father, and then to Noah. Walked with God. Generations walking with God. And that's just so cool. And so here's Noah, and obviously, I mean, he was the only one. Can you imagine being surrounded? I mean, everybody, all your neighbors, everybody is just given to violence and wickedness and corruption. Can you imagine resisting that day in, day out, not getting sucked in? I mean, what kind of faith must a person have to be able to stand strong in the midst of that? The other day, RJ got a talking to. That's my 8.5-year-old son, because he went off the radar, you know. He went off the grid. But we established it on Menar Street. You know, he can play with his friends, ride his bike, all that kind of stuff. But if you're going to go off the grid and you're going to ride somewhere else, you need to come talk with us. And he didn't. And so we were looking for him and couldn't find him. And you know how that is, parents. So, yes, he got a stern talking to. But isn't that how we are too? And too many times with God, we go off the grid. He's established the boundaries. It's all right here. We know what it is, and we just go off the grid. But Robert was just influenced by his friends. And they were going on a bike ride, and he just jumped in. And isn't that how it is for us? But God wants us to just walk with him in obedience, walking in obedience with him. And that was Noah. And he didn't go off the grid. He stayed strong, didn't get sucked in. So there was righteous Noah in the midst of just what must have been just an awful environment for him. And so God comes to him and tells him his plan. He is going to destroy the whole earth with a flood. But he wants to save Noah, but he gives him this task. And he tells him to build an ark. Oh, an ark, okay. Same word in Hebrew is only used one other time in the Bible, and that was the little basket that Moses' mom set Moses in, right? The little basket when she put him in the River Nile. And okay, God, Noah's probably thinking, yeah, in kids club, we did basket weaving. I can make a basket. So how big of a basket is this going to be? No, an ark. This is a big, big basket. This, again, like I told the kids, monolithic. This is his task. And, of course, we're talking how many millennia back? And so, you know, it wasn't just a simple matter of, hey, Shem, we need some more 2x4s. Tell you what, can you take the pickup truck, run down to Menards? While you're there, we need a little bit more pitch. We need to cover these 2x4s too. No. Hey, Shem, we need some more planks. Grab your axe. Let's go out and cut down a few more trees. And just to help with the dimensions on this, so here in Kentucky, when they built this modern ark, according to the dimensions, it was 3.1 million board feet. A board foot is 12 inches by 12 inches by 1 inch. 3.1 million. It was 229,500 square feet. Okay, NASA could lay 3 space shuttles nose to tail, 3 space shuttles on the roof of the ark. Okay? That's how big it is. Had the same storage capacity as 500 semi-truck trailers. And that's just the shell of this beast. So what about the interior? Because he tells him to make rooms in it. And then he tells him to make lower and middle and upper decks. And so Robert Moore wrote, this includes not merely framing up a hole, but building docks, scaffolds, workshops, fitting together the incredible maze of cages and crates, gathering gathering provisions for the coming voyage, harvesting the timber and producing all the various types of lumber from birdcage bars to the huge keelson beams, not to mention wrestling the very heavy, clumsy planks for the ship into their exact location and fastening them. Wow. And some of the experts argue, well, it could have been done in just as short as 20 years, because it doesn't say in the Bible exactly how many years it took. Some of them estimate more like 75 years, but a monolithic project, massive, knowing that they had to fell every tree and no power tools. Cut that board. I mean, it seems mind-boggling to us. How much help did he have? And, you know, some because it doesn't tell us in the Bible. We know that he had his three sons, their wives, his wife. Now, his grandfather, Methuselah, was still alive through the whole, basically, building of the ark. He died the same year as they entered the ark. His father, Lamech, died just 5 years before that, so may have had his dad's help. Did he hire some slaves? We don't know, but again, it was a monolithic task to be done in those times. And therefore, so many scholars today, so many scientific people would say, impossible. It couldn't have been done. This has to be a fairy tale, therefore. And they write it off as fantasy. But I would say, God gives us impossible tasks sometimes. And the Bible is full of stories, impossible tasks made possible through faith. And when it comes to science, you have to suspend reason and scientific reason when you're talking about God. Because God is a supernatural being, and so the supernatural, he can accomplish. And he works with our faith, and if we put our faith in him, amazing things can happen. You have to suspend scientific reason when God is involved. This man has been dead, Jesus, 4 days. 4 days, the heart has not been beating. No breath. 4 days, Jesus. Lazarus, come. That, scientifically, that doesn't work. Exactly. And how are you going to sustain all this menagerie on this ship? I mean, provisions of food? Come on, how could you even put that many provisions of food in there? But if God is involved, didn't he sustain the Israelites 40 years in the desert? 3 million people in a desert, and they never ran out of food because God miraculously produced the manna. And then the disciples came to Jesus, and Jesus said, hey, you know, these people, they're tired. I don't want to send them home hungry. Hey, let's make a meal for them. Are you kidding? What do you got? Come on, Jesus. I mean, all we got is a couple fish and a few small loaves. What's that for? We got 5,000 men here, let alone the women and children. How are we going to? Yeah. You can suspend all scientific reason when God is involved. Because God can do the miraculous. Now, how did Noah have the know-all to be able? I mean, come on. A shipbuilder that size with, you know, and didn't have the steel beams to work with. I mean, impossible. Come on. Look who he had as his counselor. The guy walked with God. He walked with God. So you've got all the knowledge of the whole universe right there walking with you to be able to counsel you and give you step-by-step instructions to how to make it work. Impossible tasks become possible through faith and by walking with God in obedience. At the end of the day, that's one of the amazing things about this story and what it highlights for us. And the animals, and some estimate, you know, maybe like 16,000 animals on board. Others say, well, you know, It says two of every kind, so it kind of means species, and maybe it was kind of like a reduced number, that, but they had the DNA, and after they came off out of the ark, then as they began to multiply, began to kind of morph, and so then more and more species developed. I don't know. I'm just thinking, I looked it up. Omaha Zoo, it's actually the second largest zoo in the world. The Berlin Zoo is the largest by far, but second largest Omaha Zoo. You know, how many people have been to the Omaha Zoo? Great place. Very few of you anyway. So 962 species, 17,000 animals spread out over 130 acres. Just to put into context, if you've been to the Niabe Zoo here, 140 species compared to 962 in Omaha, only 330 animals at the Niabe Zoo compared to 17,000. 40 acres in the Niabe Zoo, 130 acres there in Omaha. You can imagine the Omaha Zoo just, all the animals just being put into the ark. Lydia, and that ark was massive. How many it was, we don't know. Again, the Bible, this story is pretty succinct and brief. It doesn't give us exact numbers. But the cool thing is, in just 1 week's time, right before the flood, they all just came. And in a domesticated manner. I mean, you got carnivores, and you know, you don't hear, I mean, again, you would imagine the lion would just go after the beaver. You know, that you would imagine all of a sudden, wait, where? Oh, man, the boa constrictor ate the rat. Oh, man. And I'm just thinking, too, what must a discipline been like for Noah, you know, with his sons on the ship? For that, you get crocodile duty tonight. You know, anyway, just what was life like inside this ark? And then, you know, we imagine that there must have been great opposition and ridicule. It doesn't mention anything in it, in this Bible story. I mean, what were the neighbors saying? Were there any neighbors? Were they so secluded? Nobody even saw this. But then again, you know, if Noah, before this project even started, had lived over 500 years, always walking against the flow, putting up with all the unrighteousness, and probably being mocked for it, it's kind of like, nothing new here. Now they're making fun of me for building this big ship. So be it. I wonder how many of us, though, are going to be able to hold up against the ridicule and the persecution. Because the wickedness is increasing in our generation too. The persecution keeps growing. We need to be like Noah. We need to stay strong. We need to just stay tight with God, walking with Him. And he persevered. And all it says, and I love it, this is the way, how succinctly it says what Noah's perseverance was about. And it's the key text, the top of your sermon notes. Noah did everything just as God commanded him. How many years did this take? He did everything. 20 years, 50 or something. Everything, day after day, persevered. Persevered with faith. Persevered with obedience, faithfulness, fear of the Lord. And then the catastrophic flood came. It was a deluge, 40 days and 40 nights. Wasn't just the rain coming down, but the springs burst forth. Just everything flooded, and flooded to a level, and it says in the Bible that it covered even 23 feet above the highest mountain. That's how much water there was. Highest mountain, 23 feet higher. How did Noah even get that measurement? Is who wrote this story? The story was written by Moses, right? Okay, well, if you didn't know that, Moses wrote Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, and Deuteronomy, okay? Who did Noah get his details from? Well, oral tradition, and Noah talked to God face to face. So who told Noah? Yeah, the waters rose 23 feet above the highest mountain. Got that directly from God. Now, come on. That just sounds like hogwash. Isn't it amazing? Yeah, let me quote for you. Marine fossils are also found high in the Himalayas, the world's tallest mountain range, marine fossils, reaching up to 29,000 feet above sea level. So, for example, fossil ammonites, they're coiled marine cephalopods, are found in limestone beds in the Himalayas of Nepal. All geologists agree that ocean waters must have buried these marine fossils in these limestone beds. So how did these marine limestone beds get high up in the Himalayas? Even modern science is pointing out that there's evidence leading us to believe that, yes, there was this massive catastrophic flood that covered the whole world. This answersingenesis.com is a phenomenal website. If you want to read some of the scientific support for the Noah story and some of these other stories out of Genesis, it's right there. And yes, definitely, we hope we get a good group going. When is that? In May, Memorial Day, Dave? Yeah. So 2017, we're going to try and take a journey over to Kentucky with as many people as we can. You got to come. My family and I went there, I think it was last year, to the Creation Museum. We didn't get to see the Ark. Wasn't built yet. I was like a kid in a candy store. I mean, as a pastor, just going, oh, wow, this is so cool. All this evidence. It was just, making faith sight. It was wonderful. So you got to go. All right, so here's this catastrophic flood. 40 days and 40 nights, the waters reach, just cover the whole earth, even beyond the highest mountains, and everything perished. So the flood lasted for 150 days before it started to dissipate, but it was another 5 months into the adventure. The ark finally settled on Mount Ararat, and then after another 3.5 months, after it first settled on Ararat, they sent out the raven and then the dove. And the first time the dove came back, couldn't find some place to rest. Second time, week later, the dove came back with an olive leaf in its beak. So that was 8.5 months into it. 2 months later, it says, finally the ground was all dry, and they stayed in the ark for another 2 months. They were in the ark 1 year and 10 days before the ground was completely dry, and they came out of the ark. Wow, talk about cabin fever, huh? And Noah comes out of the ark, builds an altar, and God makes his covenant with him. A covenant is a promise from God, and God promised, never again will I destroy the whole earth with a flood. Doesn't say he's never going to destroy the earth, but with a flood. And then he sets his rainbow. He sets that as the seal, the sign of his covenant. And every time you see the rain, if you're tempted to freak out, imagine they were traumatized after this. It's raining again. There's the rainbow to remind you of God's promise. And then there's this story, and I just had to mention it. So the last part of Noah's story is, sadly, he gets drunk. He had produced a vine, a vineyard, and drank some of the wine from it, and he got drunk. And he's laying in his tent naked, and evidently Ham, the second son, sees him, sees his nakedness, which back then was taboo. You don't go checking dad out naked, evidently, all right? And so he goes and tells his brothers. They come back, and out of respect, they back up in the tent and drape then a blanket or a cloak over Noah to try and cover what would be shameful. All right, Noah isn't perfect. Yeah, Noah screwed up. Isn't that true of all of us? And some of us, though, we can get so dragged down by our failures, by our screw-ups, and feel rejected by God. But I want you to hear that message of grace. Because righteousness is not about perfection. Walking with God doesn't necessarily mean that, therefore, I'm never going to sin again. A righteous man may fall 7 times, but every time he'll get back up. Just get back up and look up to God and ask him. Now, you don't understand, Pastor. You don't understand how far I fell and for how long. Oh, I understand. God is that good. He's that gracious. He's that loving. Just get back up. Start walking with God again. And His grace will cover you. So bringing it home, the making of a hero. What was it that made Noah this hero? He walked with God in obedience, and he persevered with faith, such that the impossible was made possible through faith. And here's the deal. God is calling for heroes today. And as I said last week, quoted 2 Chronicles 69, for the eyes of the Lord move to and fro throughout the earth that he may strongly support those whose hearts are completely his. If your heart is all in, completely with God, and you're determined to walk with him in obedience, trust me, God can do amazing things. And if there are impossible situations, but I mean humanly speaking, impossible situations that you are being confronted with, just remember that faith can bring about the possible and make possible even the impossible. You can even suspend all natural reason and scientific reason when God gets involved, because he can come in with a supernatural force, and I mean a supernatural power, and he can work miracles, whether those miracles are spiritual surgery in the heart, putting back together that broken relationship. God can do miracles. What is it that you're facing today that seems impossible to you? And Jesus would say, even if you have faith the size of a mustard seed, you can say to that mountain, move and throw yourself into the ocean or into the sea, and it will do it. Just even a little bit of faith mixed with God's supernatural power, and when God gets involved, he can do amazing things, and your life can truly become heroic because it's God in you as you just walk with him in obedience. Lord, let it be.